everybody, and welcome to our podcast, Generation Q. Today we're going to be discussing queer representation in American media, and this is super exciting because this is actually our first podcast, and we're super excited to have our guest host here. So over the past 30 years, as everyone probably knows in this group, queer media has greatly changed and improved in so many different ways. And so we're definitely super excited to get more into that. But before we do that, me and my co-host Hiba are going to briefly introduce herself and then turn it over to Rose to introduce herself. So Hiba, take it away.
All right. Hi, as you heard Natalie mention my name's Hiba. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I am a queer, asexual, cis-identifying woman, and a fun fact about me is that I, like a lot of people in quarantine, took up candle making.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love
that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. So, my name is Natalie Gilbert. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. I identify as a lesbian or queer. And a fun fact about myself is my first job was actually at a zoo. So, now we're going to go over to Rose. So thank you so much for being here today, Rose, and we are so extremely excited for this topic. Rose Younglove is a director of digital media at the Michigan Gaily, and she's extremely passionate and knowledgeable about discussing queer media representation. So with that being said, Rose, could you tell us like a little bit more about yourself and your interest in this topic?
Yeah, sure. First of all, hi. My name is Rose Younglove. My pronouns are she, they, and I am gender fluid. So I identify as gender fluid, bisexual, and / or queer. And I am a communications media major. So I was super excited to talk about queer media representation. Media representation is part of why I went into my field. So, because I am a woman with ADHD, there aren't really a lot of people with ADHD because it provides a lot of psychological and social benefits. And then when I got older and realized that I was queer, I wanted to expand that to representing other kinds of people, like just wanted to see people of all skin colors, height, age, different ethnicities and origins. So that is why I focus so much on queer media representation. It's one of my favorite things to do for the Michigan Gaily. We have a lot of things that we do. One of them is we'll sometimes have quizzes about like voting for your favorite LGBTQ character. We did a year in review that was like each month and an LGBT TV event that happened. So that was really cool. But that's a little bit about me.
Great to hear that you're thinking about like expanding the communications major to include like more people from different backgrounds. So that's really awesome. So we have a list of questions for you today. And we're just going to kind of go back and forth and we'll put in our input if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Okay. So I guess the first question we have for you is, can you tell us more about like the first time you remember seeing explicitly queer media?
Yeah, sure. This is honestly like a harder question to answer than I had thought. Cause I was like, oh, like obviously I can just jump right into this. But when I started thinking about it, there were so many shows that I watched, or I shouldn't say there were so many shows, but like it was common for there to be characters that they would hint at. But I really had to think, like, when was the first time I saw queer representation in media? I think I was about 9 or 10 years old. My older sister let me watch Degrassi Next Generation, which I definitely should not have been watching. For those of you who didn't ever watch Degrassi Next Generation, it was a high school drama on MTV. Like, it was the... It was like all the high school drama things. There was like cheating on people and tests. And then there was a gay character. That was his whole thing. There was a gay male character named Marco Del Rossi. And his entire story revolved around him being closeted. And a lot of what he talked about was just like it was emphasized a lot that his family was very traditional. And he had a best friend named Elle, who was like a punk rock drummer. And they almost were together, but he was like, oh, I would. But like, unfortunately, I am a homosexual. So it's just not there, despite how good of friends we are, which I'm not going to lie, I thought was a little bit weird as a kid. I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense to me. And then there was another character, his name was Riley. He was also gay, and he was on the football team. And so it was like a big thing, like, oh my goodness, this guy is super masculine, but also gay. So like, it wasn't the worst representation. It definitely had like the seeds of, oh, what a tragedy to be queer. But like, you know, they were trying, like, and I'll give them that. It was like 2002. Or no, just kidding. I didn't watch this until I was a bit older. That was like me at 4. But I remember it because I wasn't like, it wasn't like the show had quite made up its mind about how to portray it. Like at first the characters were so upset, and then one of the characters, Riley, like kissed his male friend, and his friend was like, oh my gosh, like, whoa, what's this? And then he had a few minutes to think about it, and he was like, no, I accept Riley. And everyone was like, yeah, good for you, Peter. And I was like, all right, yeah, we love accepting gay people. So like, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't the best either.
Yeah.
But
no, you're totally good. Yeah, I've actually never watched Degrassi except for a few episodes, and it was wild, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's definitely a good experience, because I feel like that was a lot of people's like first queer representation as well. So that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Hiba, do you have also a time that you remember seeing like explicitly queer media for the first time?
I got onto the queer media scene a little later, because a lot of my, like, it wasn't explicit. I watched Kim Possible. Shego definitely had vibes, but they never specified it. Same with High School Musical. A lot of stuff wasn't specified. But the first time I saw an openly, explicitly queer character on screen was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, when in the very first episode, they introduced Captain Holt and made it very clear that he was a gay police officer. And just showing it with like as something that was an important part of him, but not the only characteristic about him, was really nice to see. Because it was a show that was like acknowledging, oh, hey, here's a central member of our story in our cast. Yes, he's gay. Yes, he's also a cop. Yes, he's these people's boss. That's all. And like, the show doesn't necessarily focus on his sexuality like it's a part of it, but it's not the only part of it, and it never frames it as a tragedy. It's just there.
That's really awesome. I think it's also kind of funny, because you both have very positive experiences like with the first time you saw queer media, and then when I'm thinking about myself, I remember always, because I grew up in a very like religious, like pious household, and so I remember that anytime we would see any even like inkling of queer representation, my father would be very against that and be like, well, this is a learning lesson as to why not to be queer. Let's talk about the Bible. Let's bring that back into this. And I'd be like, oh, well, that didn't really work out for you. But yeah, so it's definitely interesting to hear everybody's like first time that they even like witnessed or can even remember their experience with queer media. So it's great that we are able to talk about that. So second, we have another question, and this was brought up by Hiba, and so she'll take that away.
Thank you. So my question is that if you could like elaborate a little bit about the positives of queer representation in media, that would be something we really want to talk about and touch about. And how do you positively see it impacting like queer youth today?
Okay. So actually I can answer this question in part going off of some of what we just discussed. I know you mentioned like growing up in a religious home, and so I went to Catholic schools growing up. I switched from public school to Catholic school in about like 8th grade, So beforehand, I went to catechism, which is basically like Catholic schools that like you go there and they're just like, hey, like memorize the Apostles' Creed, do all this stuff. And when I went there, it was very obvious that like being gay wasn't good. Like no one would outright, like I didn't have anyone outright approach me as a child and be like, hey, this is not good for you. But like it was just something we didn't really discuss. And then as I got older, I realized like, okay, people don't really talk about this. Being queer just wasn't something that was like discussed. I clung to that poor Degrassi representation because it was all that I had. And I remember when I was in middle school, people had called me a lot of homophobic slurs that I'm not going to repeat. And so there wasn't a lot of background in what I knew about queer representation. I just knew, I'd seen it on a character in TV, and I knew that people around me thought it was weird. So part of why queer representation is so important is because it's just something that's people, especially maybe not so much nowadays, but no, I don't know. I don't think I should even say that because it really depends on everyone's individual upbringing, what they know about being queer, about queer people. And media is one thing that everyone or most people have access to. Like, you might not know, what does it mean to be bisexual? What does it mean to be asexual? What does it mean to be transgender? And you turn on Netflix and there's a new TV show and there's a transgender character. And beforehand, you didn't even know what that kind of person was or what they looked like or who they would be. And it's just a good way to provide background for people. Queer representation in media is extremely important, mostly because it humanizes the existence of people. Like just us existing. Yes, we are here. Because when you don't talk about these things, it can be really damaging to queer people. I mean, because there's nothing for you to base your existence on. There's nothing for you to say, oh, I relate to this character. Like, for me, Orange is the New Black, which is a show about women in prison, that was the best thing for me because I just saw so many different kinds of queer women. Because when you watch TV and there's one gay person or there's no gay people and it's like brought up for controversy in episodes, that it doesn't help make anyone feel good to feel like their existence is just for controversy, for plot. So when you have queer representation, there are a lot of social and psychological benefits to positive, accurate representation. Normalizing the existence of people and welcoming them into society is always important. You always want to show different kinds of people in the world. You don't want it to be us versus them. You want to say like, yes, these are people in the world. They exist just like you and me. Because there are some people who've never met a queer person. And they might not know it, but this might be the one way they get a lot of their information. If you say like, you know, I don't really know anyone who's gay myself. Oh, but I saw this show and this guy came out and that was really hard for him. So, you know, if I meet anyone who's gay, I should really keep that in mind. I've been exposed now to their experiences. And, you know, sometimes that's the only way you can learn about other people's experiences is seeing it through media. So it's beneficial in that it educates those who are not queer, and it's good representation for those who are. You can see yourself in there. You can link yourself to something. Because if you don't have anyone around you who's queer, I mean, you don't really have anyone to look to. And that's why I think it's just so important to have those people in media. Because, for example, my family really didn't talk about being queer growing up. Now, my mom thought it was like, oh, we don't really talk about it because, I don't know, I just don't think about it. And my kids probably know that it's not a big deal. But kids are kids, like they don't know that. I thought, oh, we don't talk about this because it's weird or it's not appropriate. And when I would see it in TV, that's just a way to say, like, this is something we talk about. This is something that's okay to discuss, that's okay to be, to see, like to write about. And that's just such, I can't emphasize how important of a message that is. Like, Love, Simon, for example, is a great example of positive queer representation. The part of the story is like, yes, his identity. And that is good because, you know, people do need to see themselves represented in that way. But it's also about his friends, what he does, because some queer representation is sometimes like the only thing about the character is that they are gay. And it's like the tragedy of being gay, which is like a very common thing in queer media. So Love, Simon, I think, is a good example of like someone who is queer. And, you know, another thing about Love, Simon is there are multiple queer characters in the film. And if you read the books, they're even more. It's also like it's a romantic comedy, which is great. Because for the longest time, if you were looking up like LGBT films, they're like, would you like to watch this like 4-hour French movie about the tragedies of being a lesbian? And like that's not it. You know, that can't cut it. That can't be it. Sorry, really long answer.
No, you're totally good. Everything you brought up is super important, and I totally agree with you, like, on all the different levels you were talking about. I think personally for me, because I had grown up in such a religious household, it was like I was had a lot of like internalized homophobia, so it didn't actually occur to me in college that, you know, like, okay, this is a lifestyle, and like, I mean, it's like who I am. And so it was like, it didn't occur to me until that point. And I remember like thinking, oh, I can't be gay. And then I started binge watching like all these different queer movies and being like, oh my God, I am. And it was like the best realization of my life. Right. But at the same point, you know, I thought it's really important to have that queer representation because I feel like without it, maybe I wouldn't have fully understood for a while that, you know, I am a lesbian.
Right.
And, you know, that is like a part of who I am. Do you have anything to add on that, Hiba?
When you talked about like queer movies, I totally agree. Blue is the warmest color. Just cannot be the only piece of media out there. It should not.
It cannot. See, exactly. And, you knew.
For me, it was like I grew up in a household where we just didn't talk about it in the sense that my parents never thought it was something that should be brought up, never in a negative or a positive context. So for me, my gateway was Tumblr. Tumblr was like, hey, so like there's these, and the thing is my parents never monitored my media usage. So I was free to make my own conclusions with whatever I saw. And like despite the fact that Tumblr is a garbage dumpster fire of a site, it's kind of been a safe haven for LGBTQIA plus people and neurodivergent individuals. And it's told people that it's okay to be different. And there's a lot of people like you out there. And I think it was the place that helped me understand that I was asexual. I wasn't broken or I wasn't like aging slower than everyone else. This is just who I was. And it was okay to be that person.
Right. Yeah. I think honestly, like, again, prefacing it, Tumblr is a garbage site. I still use it because I just don't like that much social media, which surprises everyone because I'm a director of digital media. But Tumblr, I think, is very much like it's a comfort website. One thing about I should have known this when I was way younger, but when I was a kid, all right, I'm just going to say, I watched Supernatural. There, I got it out. And I read a bunch of stuff about, like, gay characters. And there's actually, like, a big linkage between LGBT people and reading fan fiction. Because for a lot of people, fan fiction is some of the only ways you get, like, main characters who are queer, who have a developed relationship that isn't just the one gay male character meets the gay guest star character.
There's a plethora of like, Stephen Bucky fanfiction out there that is proof that and Destiel, the enduring story of Dean and Castiel.
The story of Dean and Castiel. I'm sorry, not to go off. That's back to queer representation, but it's just, definitely. You know, it's good to have. Because it's just that feeling of normalizing it. Like, everyone wants to be represented. No one wants to be like, it's frustrating when you have to, you know, you have to continuously, coming out is something that can be very, you know, personal, frustrating. It's something you have to do multiple times. So it's nice to see, like, characters who are imagined as being like you or characters who just are like you. I mean, that's a lot of emotional support for a group of people who don't always have that support from other people. So, you know, you can really, you can see them and, hey, oh, that character, like, for me, it was Mulan. Mulan doesn't know what gender is and is going to dress up like a man. And also, you know, might be queer in other ways that Mulan slaps. So, you know.
Yes.
Sorry, that's a little tangent, but, you know, it's good stuff. Sorry, what was your next question?
Oh, you're totally good. So our next question is, now that we've kind of, like, discussed, like, the good aspects and good side of queer representation in media, what do you see as some of the common issues with it? And then what are some of, like, maybe the common stereotypes that you see perpetuated in this media?
Oh boy. I wish I had, like, the clapping hands emoji, like, just to be like, all right, let's get this off the ground. So, queer-coded villains. Ugh, the number of conversations I've had about queer-coded villains is ridiculous. There are a few different negative gay stereotypes out there. There's, like, the predator lesbian, or, like, woman attracted to a woman. And, you know, that one's never fun. There's kill your gays is more of a trope where, well, it's exactly what it sounds like. Your gay characters die. the one that I think is the most common is the queer-coded villain, who's usually a male villain. For this character, we look for effeminate-coded characters. People who are written to be gentle or vulnerable or manipulative. We're not looking at, we're not looking for, like, your strong 1950s guy, like, I fix cars for a living and all the girls like me and I'm kind of chauvinistic, but it's fine. We're looking at a gay character who might be described as manipulative, a kiss up, a suck up, like not a real man. You also look for, this is a lot of times in children's shows, especially like him from the Powerpuff Girls in the red heels, the makeup, someone who goes out.
Okay.
Children,
I was terrified of him for
Hisoka.
I was terrified of him because of the sheer terror that was there. I thought his outfit was fabulous, but he was terrifying.
The outfit, he was terrifying. I mean, it was the, yes, honestly, it was the voice for me. Like, I mean, kudos to the voice actor. The voice did so much. I remember when I was a kid, I was just, like, obsessed with the Powerpuff Girls for, you know, reasons I didn't realize until later. And I remember I would do, like, a him impersonation to scare my sisters, and to this day, it lives in infamy, but, like, I'm not going to do that because we're on a podcast, and I don't think anyone wants that. But, yeah, like, any characters who, a lot of queer characters or queer-coded characters, you'll see them working with kids. You'll see them working with women. You'll see them framed as, like, sneaky, conniving. What is that movie? What's the one where he rubs, you know, you rub the lotion on your skin?
Are you thinking
Clarice,
of Buffalo Bill from Silence from the Lambs? Because the,
yes,
the lotion just reminds me.
So there was actually,
it just reminded me of the lotion in the basket thing.
So, oh no.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going for.
Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs down a list. Was definitely genderqueer coded.
Oh, definitely. I wrote down, like, a list of movies to bring up, and I misplaced it, and now I'm just like, Rose, why are you doing this? So, yeah, Silence of the Lamb fueled a lot of outrage in the gay community. The film even resulted in riots outside of the Academy Awards for its depiction of the murderer Buffalo Bill. Because, you know, you see this character putting on lipstick. You see him putting on earrings. You see them, like, they have a really feminine voice. They have a poodle. They cross-dress. And so that was viewed as a promotion of transphobia. And that is something you really have to look out. Like, one thing, if there's a male character especially who's coded as being, like, really effeminate, sneaky, being around kids, deceptive, and that's been a stereotype for a really long time. The movie The Maltese Falcon is a really good example also. Now, this is a bit of an older movie. The Maltese Falcon was released...
Feels the 40s.
I think so, yeah. And it was based... So it was based off of the book of the same name. And there, one of the supporting characters, Joel Cairo, is a villain who is also gay. He's described as, in the book, he's like described as having smaller bones, dark skin. He smells like the fragrance of Chipper. The first thing readers learn about Cairo is his sexuality. So he is made, it's very made apparent, like he is queer. He's labeled queer by another character. And then the author actually describes him as weak, unsure of himself. It says he held a black derby hat in a chamois gloved hand and came towards Spade with short, mincing, bobbing steps. So again, not masculine. Someone who isn't sure of themselves. Someone who's weak. Someone who isn't seen as masculine. He's actually called a fairy at one point. And he's slapped by the main protagonist. And he says, when you're slapped, you'll take it and like it. So there was a lot of brutality towards homosexuality and just this general view of they're not to be trusted. They're not trustworthy people. They're not sure of themselves. Don't have them around kids. And they were also seen as someone they never paid attention to gender rules. And that was seen as a big threat by the Catholic Church, which started up a lot of these titles and these this red tape that writers had to go through. This was called the Motion Picture Production Code, or the MPPC, and the Code of Practices for Television Broadcasters. This is when homosexuality was still legally shown on screen, but after the MPPC and Code of Practices for Television Broadcasters, they said, you know, we really don't want you to promote queer characters. We don't want queer characters of any kind. Because what actually surprises a lot of people is, and I'm sorry, I know I'm going a little bit of a rant.
No, you're totally good.
The first media representation.
No, you're totally good.
Oh, sorry. Let's see. So the first media representation of homosexuality is, actually, it's in 1895. It's known as the Gay Brothers. It's like a 2-minute clip. It's silent, of course. And like I said, this is before the MPPC and Code of Practices for Television Broadcasters. Homosexuality was still legally shown on screen. For example, the Gay Brothers shows two men dancing together as a man plays the violin. And this open displays on screen was further pursued in the 1900s with films like Wings. Wings was it won the best picture at the first ever Academy Awards in 1927. So the first ever Oscar-winning best picture was actually showed a gay kiss between two men. Now, it was set in World War I, and there was a lot of World War I and II movies where they're saying, like, oh, well, you know, they're just friends. But in Wings, it shows David Armstrong, that's played by Richard Arlen, and Jack Powell. Jack Powell's played by Charles Roger. So Armstrong and Powell are delivering this really emotional goodbye in the film. In the closing scene, Armstrong is lying in a hospital bed. There are doctors surrounding him. They're saying, like, hey, he's got minutes to live. And Powell takes his friend's hand, and they just stare at each other, and they hold each other in their arms, and then Powell kisses him. And it's not treated as a joke. It's not, there's no, like, oh, well, he was just a friend, or there's nothing. Like, there's no after the thought, well, we need to explain why this kiss happened. It just happened. And then the film went on to win Best Picture at first ever Academy Awards. So it surprises people there actually is positive queer representation in some older films, but that all changed in the 1930s. There was, you know, in the 1930s, there was the Great Depression. So people weren't really going out to movie theaters. You know, they didn't have money to spend going to theater. So media in general just wasn't doing well. So people were trying to think, like, what's anything we can do to get people to come to the movies? Like, what shocking things can we do? So that was challenged in some, really just, to be honest, pedophilia encouraging ways. Because queer women, queer men, they were shown in films. Amy Jolly, she was a famous performer. She's the main character of Morocco. That was released in 1930. And during one performance, Jolly, she dresses in a suit and she's singing before kissing another woman. And the woman, she's not like, oh my God, so gross. You know, she's the woman that she's pursuing. She blushes and Jolly tips her. She tips her hat and she continues going after her male co-star. They don't seek to explain it. And when it happens, it's just a harmless kiss and some flirting. And they're at a club and some guys laugh and that's it. The really thing that was most important was maintaining proper gender roles. Like, as long as one person maintained their proper gender role, same-sex affection was allowed and even celebrated in the early 1900s. Representation was high, but like I said, with the Great Depression coming, profits were really low, and American families just couldn't spare money for movie tickets during the Great Depression. So to encourage ticket sales, film companies showed like more scandalous film plots. The Sign of the Cross, it's a really good example. That was released in 1932, and it featured slave boys sleeping with kings and an empress being disrobed by women. It created this really negative stereotype that you see a lot in media of the predator gay person. The gay people are coming after your children. Gay people are... they're wrong, they're dirty, just like this really awful portrayal of people. And it was all just for views. It was people trying to make money. And this turned into something so much more. It really upset Catholic organizations. And that led to the formation of the National Legion of Decency in 1933. The National Legion of Decency was dedicated to identifying movies that they believed opposed Christian values. Kind of like if you go on Rotten Tomatoes and you're looking for, like, what can I tag? Like, the National Legion of Decency was like, hashtag Christian. Is it in there? Is it not? What you need to know. So broadcasting and production companies also created regulations on film and TV because, you know, this was like the 1930s. They were like, oh, well, the Catholic Church doesn't want this. Well, then we can't have this. So the MPPC and the Code of Practices for Television Broadcasters forbade queer representation. And this is where you start to see a lot of these villainy, like these queer-coded characters, because audiences... actually, I'm sorry, not audiences. Filmmakers, television stars, you know, they still wanted to have gay characters. They still thought, like, oh, well, this can still get us views. But we don't want to get in trouble with the church. So what if we just have this man come on in high heels? What if we show women who might be gay, but will never confirm it? So this is really where that queer-coded villain came up. Because organizations knew they're not allowed to show queer content. But, you know, if you're making fun of the queer person and they're not confirmed to be queer, then that's fine. The Catholic Church was like, you know, we will allow you to make fun of queer-coded people as a treat, but, you know, no confirming it. And the movies were like, that's fine. What's queer representation anyways? We don't even need that. We're just here for some, you know, some wink winks that isn't this guy fruity. That's all we want, really. So that's where a lot of those negative stereotypes came in, is when it was outlawed, actually, by the National League of Decency and the MPPC. So that's where you see a lot of those negative stereotypes.
Yeah, absolutely. That, I mean, I had no idea about all those different stereotypes in the history. So it's really interesting for me to see about and learn about like the history of like where that came from. I know also one of the stereotypes that I see constantly in lesbian movies is like how the woman always like dies, or the ending is also really super tragic. And it's just like so annoying, because it's like, why is this the only representation that we're getting? What about you? Yeah, what about you, Hiba?
Right.
Like, when you mentioned about gay characters being coded as villains, it's really interesting, because I immediately thought of Jim Moriarty, even in, like, the modern 2010s Sherlock. The writers used, yes, he was a villain, but, like, the fact that his sexuality was inherently tied in with it the moment he was introduced was very disturbing. And that kind of also goes into, like, how, first off, there's barely any asexual representation, and it's always subtle. And it usually tends to be that asexual characters are somehow devoid of empathy or emotion, or they are somehow villains. Like Watchmen, the villain Adrian Veidt or Ozymand Dias is asexual, but he's also considered like this megalomaniac who wants to take over the world. Same with like Sherlock. Jim Moriarty is considered to be a homoromantic asexual individual, and even Sherlock is considered ace. But again, Sherlock is shown as someone who cannot connect with basic emotion, and in Harry Potter, Voldemort is hinted as being asexual and like aromantic. So that's a very destructive stereotype that has been plaguing the asexual community for like a really long time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely an issue. There's anytime, I think, especially in like scary, anytime people want to create a villain, there is a tendency in media for people to go against what you know. That's why characters like the scary mom, or the mom being possessed in a horror movie, who's not nurturing, she is often portrayed as the villain or someone who's possessed, because that's supposed to be, you know, something that's considered unnatural. Of course, women are always made to be mothers. Of course, women are always nurturing. If they're not, there must be something wrong with them. If men are presenting as masculine, there must be something wrong with them. If a character doesn't experience romantic or sexual attraction, that's because they're different from the norm. And like, that's just not fair to anyone, really, because it does a great disservice to queer people, and it does a great disservice to all people, because it's just forcing us into a box. It's saying, well, you can be on TV if you follow all of these rules, if you pay attention to what's societally acceptable, if you, you know, stay in these lines. You can make fun of a gay character, you can show a man in a skirt for laughs, you can't do it in a serious way. And that's, you know, you can see that's really changing, I think, with more streaming services. Streaming services are, you know, they have pros and cons, because sometimes they really change how a story is able to be told, but there's also that many more options. Like Pose, for example, Billy Porter, when he wore a skirt, or a dress, I'm sorry, to an awards show, and he said, I really think
it was either the
reason it struck so many people is because it wasn't. That was it. Yeah. And, you know, and he looked great. And he was like, hey, I'm not wearing this as a joke. And that really threw people off. Like, they didn't know what to do with that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I mean, I loved Pose. It was so amazing. And, I mean, it was Rob.
It's a good show.
But, yeah, it really was. It was such an amazing show and characterization of queer life and all these different multidimensional characters that aren't solely based on the fact that they are queer. It was just really amazing to see that representation. We have another question about more contemporary examples of queer media. So this was something that I specifically wanted to hear your take on. So, you know, as I was growing up, I remember watching a lot of Modern Family and not always knowing whether or not to laugh at like the gay character Cam's comical and like over the top behaviors. And then when I found out that the character that plays Cam isn't actually gay, it made me feel a little even more confused about like my input on that and what I thought about it. And then when gay characters are written to portray right. like a humorous persona, is this a negative thing all the time? And then is it made specifically for the straight gays? I kind of wanted to know your like take on that specific example.
Yeah, sure. And you know what? That's a great question. I was actually just reading an article about something like this a few weeks ago. I don't know if you guys have seen this film called The Prom. It's on Netflix right now. Mm-hmm. It's got Meryl Streep, and James Corden plays someone who's gay. And, you know, as we know, James Corden is heterosexual. Mm-hmm. He's cishet heterosexual. So he plays this really, really, really effeminate guy. And his character's supposed to be gay. And a lot of people are really divided on it. Some people think, like, you know, this is reducing gay people to one kind of personality, and it's not even from someone who's gay. So I think what is most important to keep in mind when telling stories of gay characters is you want it told from an authentic perspective. Like, I can understand why Cam's comical, over-the-top behaviors kind of makes, you know, you question things because you're like, well, this person isn't gay, so are they just, you know, do they just pick some gay stereotypes and, you know, throw it on the dartboard and say, oh, these will work? I think what's most important, I never want to say that a person or a group should be represented in one way, because that's something you see a lot of problems with. Like, for example, like, Black women are always strong and they're not vulnerable. You don't want someone to be represented in one way, but you want them to be represented authentically. Like, mm-hmm. not every story about a gay character should be, oh, it's so tragic that they're gay. Isn't it just the worst thing that could happen to someone? So sad. Like, you don't want that. So I think it's good to have gay characters who, you know, can be comical. It's good to have gay characters who can be vulnerable. It's good to have gay characters who wear pink every day. It's good to have gay characters who say, what's gender? It's good to have gay characters who say, like, you know, you want to have that variation, because you never want people to say, like I remember with Love, Simon, people were saying, like, oh, like, do we really need this gay movie? I mean, gay stuff is kind of everywhere now. Why do we need Love, Simon? And, like, that's a ridiculous question, because at what point do you think, like, you know what, I've seen, well, what point does, like, the average person say, you know what, I think I've seen myself enough on TV, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah. I think that's a good answer. You know, the more that we have this representation, there's going to be obviously multifaceted views of, like, these identities.
Yeah, like, I definitely think, yeah. Right. Like, you want someone to be represented as, you know, you want characters to be people. Like, I think it's fine to write gay characters as humorous. I mean, yes. We're hilarious. We're funny. I think I'm pretty funny, but I wouldn't want a show to be made about me where I was just like, you know what? I'm all these gay stereotypes, and the person, like, no gay person had any input on this. Like, that's not mm-hmm. ideal. I think you should strive for authentic representation. I don't think there's anything wrong with writing a character one way, but you shouldn't write that entire group.
Yeah, that one totally
way. Does that make sense?
Definitely makes sense. And it's great to hear, like, your view of it, like, being an expert in, like, communications and media. Yeah, Gibba, sure. Do you have any, like, last comments about this question?
Regarding this question, I feel like there are quite a few examples that I've seen that still persist right now. Like, in the show Never Have I Ever, they do have a gay character that does feature prominently in the show. But at the same time, we have two very differently shown gay characters. One character, a male character, is pretty much a caricature. Okay. Of, like, a young male character. At one point, he refers to himself as a baby Buttigieg, which was, like, you don't need to do that. No one does that. On the other hand, they had a very beautiful, heartwarming coming out arc of, like, this young Latina gay character and, like, her mom eventually coming to terms with her being comfortable with her identity. So, like, I felt, like, a little conflicted about that, because it's... it's trying to say that, hey, we know there's different kinds of gay people everywhere. But it also felt like, hey, why did you want to make that one, like, you know, one gay guy so stereotypically gay that it's not even funny?
Yeah, right. I feel like it's definitely a balancing act when it comes to these movies. Like, we want to have representation and, you know, of people, but we also don't want to make it stereotypical. And I think, like, a big thing is going back and asking, you know, these directors if they ask their queer friends or ask, you know, that type of audience, queer audience, like, what do they think about this representation? I think that if they had that input, they could come up with better quality characters and arcs and story types.
Right, because, I mean, you don't, you know, you want to write a character, not a caricature. You want a fleshed out character. You don't want them to reduce to one single thing. And, you know, if you're writing about a type of person, you do your research, just like you're writing about anything. If I'm writing a murder mystery set in the 1800s, I don't instantly know everything I need to know. I need to do research. And that's the same thing when you're writing any type of character or when any type of plot. You don't know Absolutely. Until you know.
Yeah, and I think that's also, I mean, it's come, I do a lot of fiction writing, and that comes to my mind a lot because I really do enjoy writing queer characters. But because I've only had the experience of, you know, being a lesbian woman, you know, I can't generalize my experience to everyone else. And so if I do tend to make those characters, I want to reach out to other people from those specific groups and ask them, hey, is this the right way to be represented? And I think that's a really good tool that should be used more in directing and, you know, with media in general.
Yeah, it really starts some really good conversations. And that's another reason why, like, queer representation is so important. It just starts those conversations. I had a class last semester that was a creative fiction writing, and I had a character who used they, them pronouns. And I had to explain it to my professor, and she asked at one point, like, oh, well, this character says, like, oh, I need this thing. Shouldn't they say they need this thing? Shouldn't they say, like, they want this? They're tired. And another kid in my class who used they, them, they said, like, you know, no, I refer to myself when I'm talking about myself as one person. I am, unless I'm not Smeagol from Lord of the Rings. And it was like, you know, it was a funny moment, but it was also just like a conversation I don't think my professor had ever had before. And it's just important to have those conversations, you know, to make people think, like, oh, I'm not experiencing these kinds of things. But of course, other people are, you know, things people just don't think about. And it's not necessarily like a wrong thing. It sometimes it's just a, you know, it's not in your life. You don't think about it. And so media can really open those doors.
Absolutely. So yeah, this has been like a great conversation so far. We just have one more final question for you, if that's all right. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Hiba, you can ask this question. Sure.
All right. What do you view as the most important piece of, like, queer American representation in the way that it paved the way for future representation?
Oh, that's a really good question. Gosh. I want to say, like, I'm not going to lie, I want to just instantly say Bohemian Rhapsody, but I'm like, maybe you should think. Because, like, historically, gosh, they're, you know, historically, we've, now I'm going with it. I'm going to say Bohemian Rhapsody. You know what? I'm doing it. I mean, and the reason I say Bohemian Rhapsody is, and, you know, it might shock people because, like, it's not a super old movie. I mean, it came out just a few years ago. But Bohemian Rhapsody talks about, you know, Freddie Mercury, who is Pakistani. He died of AIDS. He was bisexual. These were a lot of important stories to see brought to life. Or not brought to life, but, you know, represented in media. You know, President, you know, gosh, with President Reagan and then President Nixon's views, or sorry, President Nixon's views on politics, personal beliefs, and then President Reagan just continued the White House's negative views on homosexuality. He didn't say anything as the AIDS crisis continued. The members of the gay community, you know, they We lost partners and friends to this seemingly unstoppable disease that became known as the gay disease. That, you know, be careful, you can't be around gay people. They're contagious. They're dirty. They're awful. It's seen like in a lot of 80s films, being gay, called gay, is the worst insult you can possibly give. So to see someone in the 1980s being written as successful, written as, and it's also just, it's, Hollywood really struggles with writing characters who are bisexual, who are pansexual, who, the characters who like more than one gender are so easily portrayed as deceitful, spoiled, somebody who wants everything, someone who, you know, that they don't care who you are. They might go after you because you're this, you're that, that you can't predict them. And Freddie Mercury was just such, it's such a good movie. Sorry. He was just such, I mean, he didn't figure things out right away. And he didn't want to talk about these things. He wanted to continue as a musician. And it's something that's, I think, difficult sometimes for people, younger gay, queer people, to understand. You know, you want to say like, oh, I'm so proud of this. I'm so proud to be who I am. But, you know, that could be really dangerous and still is dangerous now, but especially during the 1980s. And so I think to see someone who, and a lot of people also, like, you know, Freddie Mercury, Queen, they're associated with like football and like really traditionally masculine things sometimes. And so I think to have a movie sit down and say like, hey, this person is not white. They are not straight. They are not gay. They are bisexual. They had AIDS. He is a good person. He did not understand what was happening. He didn't know. It's not his fault, because that's just not an area of history that I think is discussed enough. I mean, millions of people lost their friends and their families, and we don't even really talk about it in history classes. So I think that was a really good movie, because, you know, it said like, we're going to talk about someone in one of the most vulnerable times in the U.S. to be gay, or to be bisexual, I'm sorry. And as someone who is bisexual, that was just, it was so moving to see. I think that is what I would go with, just because I don't think the AIDS crisis receives enough publicity. And so to see them talk about a real life human being and how he struggled with this, and that the experience also of, you know, his friends grow up, they get married, they have kids, and he's just so alone. And it really explores a lot of things that come with being queer, you know, but it's not like the tragedy of being queer because we need a queer character. It's, this was a real person. This was his life. These were things he experienced. And I think that's a really good message to tell people. Like, you're not just here to be a token character. You're here because you've always been here.
I remember seeing that movie and theaters and absolutely loving it, especially when they sing I Want to Break Free. That was so good, so beautiful. I think it had a lot to say about society and not being accepted by society, because I remember in that movie he wanted to, you know, he was thinking about coming out as bisexual, but he was told that he could lose everything. And that's true. Like, he could have lost his whole career, all of his savings and everything. And so it was really hard. And I think they didn't make it into, oh, the tragedy of being gay. It was more so the tragedy of not being accepted by society and how terrible that must feel to be so loved by so many people, but not being able to show your authentic self. Do you have any?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, you go.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I was going to say one quick thing. Like, you know, and also, like, when he's speaking to the woman he's married to, and he tells her, like, hey, I think I'm bisexual. And even she says, like, no, you're gay. And I remember I went out to go see this movie with some friends, and I hadn't come out yet. And one of my friends leaned over and they're like, after the movie, and they're like, oh my gosh, I thought that was so funny. Like, she saw right through him. She was like, come on, you're not bisexual, you're gay. And it was so uncomfortable. Like, it was so uncomfortable. And like, I didn't really know how to breach that conversation. But like, later when I told this person, like, I came out, we had a really long conversation about it. And they said, like, oh, like, I'd never even thought about like bi erasure. So like, there's another example right there just of like conversations that people really think about.
Yeah, there's so many good points about the movie. I'm so glad that you brought it up. And, you know, like the AIDS representation as well. Mm-hmm. I thought in Pose also, I mean, I loved how they brought that in too.
Oh,
especially,
yeah.
When they were talking about, you know, the island where they had all those like unknown bodies of like victim, like who had died because of AIDS. And I had no idea that it even existed. Right. So I think that definitely is like a big crisis that doesn't get enough publicity, and like people still don't understand, and people still have these misconceptions of it being, you know, a gay disease, or, you know, they still have that kind of perception, and it's because the story isn't really being told. Hiba, do you have any last kind of remarks about this?
Okay, this might honestly be a weird hot take, but I think in some ways it was Glee. And I'll explain why. Glee, for all its faults as a TV show, for all the issues it has had, had prominently queer members in its cast, recurring over time.
It really did.
And like, Chris Colfer's character, while initially made fun of, like, the fact that all of his friends accept him and he's a key part of the group, and he finds love and happiness in his... He finds a partner. He finds a boyfriend in one of his classmates. And they like have their ups and downs. But like, Kurt is, he's considered an important part of this group. And despite his, it also showed a very interesting point of like, despite how his father, who was not initially comfortable with his son being gay, realized that his child's happiness mattered more than anything else. And I think having such a mainstream and widely beloved show that constantly had gay characters, like it had a gay character, it had two gay characters getting married on screen. It had two gay couples getting married. That was Brittany and Santana, and that was Kurt and Blaine. And yes, these characters could have been dealt with so much better, but the fact that Ryan Murphy and his team introduced like this, I think really, especially it showed a lot of teens that you're not broken or wrong, or it's not just a phase. You're you, and people like you are around you, and you will be celebrated. And these characters were loved and celebrated. Like, they had head cheerleaders be gay characters, and I think that was really important in a way, because, you know, before that, that was Mean Girls. And Mean Girls was like, oh, the weird outsider, outlier girl is gay, and it's like a really bad thing. But here, they had some very important people in the school social hierarchy be gay and be like, they were femme gay characters, and it was great. So yeah, Glee had a lot of issues, but I think it, in some ways, especially on the small screen, it was revolutionary in the sense that, oh yeah, having gay people is totally normal. And in a commercial sense, the show was still a hit. Still is, even now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's so great to like think back about like all the amazing queer American like representation in media, and just, you know, how far it has come is just really great to think about and to kind of talk about. So that was kind of the last question that we had for you, Rose. Is there anything you would like to add?
Sure. Oh my gosh. I feel bad. I don't want to talk anyone's ear off, because I know I've been doing that. Oh, goodness. There's so many things, too, that I could... Just again, emphasizing, we've said a few different times, like, it's really important to just have as many options as you can with queer representation, you know? It's, you know, sometimes mistakes are made, and that can happen. Like, okay, we were talking about Glee, I was talking about Degrassi. Like, neither of these were, like, you know, always perfect. But they're so important. Like, it's just so important to be seen, to be heard. Like, some kids really don't have anyone to talk to about these things. And it's just such, it's very encouraging. It's It can be a really steady presence when, like, a lot of other things about being queer aren't. You know, you might not know anyone who's queer. So representation, queer representation, I think it's just really important just to make people feel seen. Like, again, it has a lot of social and psychological benefits. Is definitely, awesome. That's what I'd want to emphasize.
Yeah, well, we want to thank you so much for your time and going over this with us.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rose. It was so good talking to you.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, thank you.
All right, we hope you have a wonderful day.
All right, thank you so much. You guys too.